Megan Gatos is up next. Megan was a student at Berkeley and decided to come and work with us. And I just have to say, she's our labor rights and health team leader. And I give her really difficult, challenging things to do that don't have immediate, obvious rewards. She does them very well.
But it's my pleasure to do them. I also have no financial relationships to disclose. So I wanted to start off with several worker testimonies because that's what sort of motivates us to do this work. So this is Oscar's testimony. I'm originally from Veracruz, Mexico, and came to U.S. because I could not find work and needed to support my wife, four children, parents, and sister with a disability. For the last 6 months, I go daily to the street corners to find work as a day laborer. Maybe once a week I will get a job, sometimes for a few hours, sometimes for a couple days. Often I'm not paid the amount the boss says he will pay. One day I was helping paint a house and fell two stories off the ladder. My hand landed on the spike in the ground and I broke my arm and leg. The boss drove me to the ER, dropped me off, and left. I have over $200,000 in medical bills and still cannot work. So this is Oscar's testimony. Next one is Myra's testimony. As a domestic worker, she worked for a year with a family who made her sleep on the floor of the children's room and had to be up by 5 a.m. every day. She ate their leftovers and wasn't allowed to prepare her own food, even though she had diabetes and that wasn't her culturally appropriate food. The family would tell them that they cared for her, but the way of caring was hurting her. Not every worker has the same story, but we were all just as vulnerable. And then thirdly, there are stories from restaurant workers. This is a quote from a 50-year-old low-wage worker who had experienced thousands and thousands of dollars in wage theft. Being a dog would be better than being a worker in the United States. And another worker said, too many people are looking for a job. You don't want to risk getting fired because you know and the boss knows that there will be others to fill your position. I start these off because San Francisco is actually one of the premier cities in the country in terms of having labor laws. We have paid sick days law in the book. We first have the highest minimum wage. We have a healthcare security ordinance, so everybody's supposed to be entitled to health insurance. And yet all of these stories are coming from San Francisco. Low-wage and immigrant workers are experiencing really harsh working conditions, even in San Francisco where we have these protective laws. And as Rajiv said, it's really important that if laws are on the books, that we're enforcing them to make sure that everybody has access to these. At the same time, it's not just about labor laws. There's a whole mesh of different other things in terms of immigration policy, in terms of access to housing, in terms of all the different other environments that work together to create healthy environments. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about the labor focus on this. So you think about how important the work environment is for people's health. It's where people often get health insurance. It's where they get their minimum wage or like the wages that they use to pay rent, to pay groceries, to pay child care. It's if they are able to take time off or not to go take care of their kids or their little ones, whether they have money to pay for somebody to take care of their little baby. gushing moments when she comes out of the room. So the work environment is a really critically important part of what people's lived experiences and how that impacts health. And wage theft is actually a really huge problem that's starting to have growing attention to the issue of wage theft. Just briefly, I'm going to list off some examples of it. Wage theft is defined as the illegal underpayment or non-payment of workers' wages by employers. Examples of wage theft include not paying minimum wage or overtime, misclassifying employees as independent contractors, forcing workers to work off the clock, not providing final paychecks, and not paying workers at all. There was a survey a couple years ago in Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York City of 4,397 low-wage workers, and they found that 68% of workers experienced at least one pay-related violation in the previous work week. So 68% of 4,000 workers, which represented tens of thousands of workers in these three largest cities in the U.S. 26% of workers were paid less than the legally required minimum wage, and 76% of workers who worked overtime were not paid the legal overtime rate. So why do we care about wage theft? Because it results in income loss and the inability to meet people's basic needs. It results in increased stress. You don't know whether you're going to have enough money to pay rent, if you're going to be evicted. That can lead to exhaustion. It can lead to stress within your family dynamics. And longer term, we know how stress impacts health. We also are finding that employers who are likely to violate labor law are also less likely to actually provide a healthy workplace. And as the picture says, workers can't eat for seat. So this is from, I think it's from a rally in front of Harvard around the living wage, that it's just such an important piece that so many people end up taking for granted, that living wage is critical to health. So why are we focusing on health? There's extensive literature that shows income is one of the strongest predictors of health, as well as employment conditions impact health and demand on social safety net. There was a study by UC Labor Center that talked about if you were to ensure that everybody got $14 an hour, you would reduce the demand on social safety net, I think, by $5 billion. And so it's just getting to basically, even if you were to reduce it, even just ensure that the minimum wage is being met, you would reduce it, I think, by $8 billion. It's huge amounts that are demanding on social safety net because they're not getting what they should be getting from their employers. At the same time, there's often labor policies are often debated in the legislature based on economic terms. How is it going to impact the employers? Often the employers have a lot of lobbying capacity, but the workers rarely do. And so the health impacts of these labor laws are rarely considered, even though there's health evidence, as we know, around the income and employment conditions that say this is important for health. We also know, since we're working in the program on health equity and sustainability, that low-wage and immigrant workers are also the ones that are most likely to experience other types of health inequities. They are the ones who are most likely to be living in poor housing, to have poor access to food, to have to depend on public transportation and are vulnerable to sort of the spikes in transportation costs, et cetera. And so they're a very vulnerable population. And at the same time, we already regulate and monitor certain industries, and so this is an opportunity for us to get involved. So this is why we started getting as an environmental health section involved in this. And I'm going to just quickly go through examples of each of these four different areas in which we're working. So with regard to education, one of the ways that we first initially get it started in doing this work environment program is through Karen Yu, who's a health inspector. She had been going out and doing lead inspections and finding that a lot of people that were removing the lead from houses, in San Francisco, a lot of old housing stock has lead paint on it. She was finding that the people who were removing them, the paint, were rarely ever wearing protective equipment. And so that led to direct health exposures, as Joe can talk a lot more about the lead health impacts of lead exposure. And so that led to us approaching the day laborer program that is doing, that's a lot of day laborers are the ones who are removing the paint, to approach and talk about doing a health and safety program. We were lucky to receive a grant from NIOSH to do a number of different health and safety projects with the day laborer program, and it resulted in all these different activities. It resulted in vocational trainings, as you can see a picture on the bottom, in terms of how people can safely protect themselves and remove paint. It led to green and safe cleaning trainings. The next picture over is Guillermina Castellanos, who some people may have heard her talk yesterday. She's an amazing domestic worker that they've been learning how to do safe, non-toxic cleaning in people's homes. There was a worker rights education course, and that they founded a legal clinic, bringing lawyers to partner with the day labor program to help go and prosecute those employers who were not paying back wages. And the legal clinic helped recover. It's still going today. At the end of the grant cycle, it had recovered, I think, about $300,000 in back wages for employees. At the same time, we've been doing education where we can with food safety managers. In San Francisco, every restaurant is required to have somebody who's been trained in food safety as a manager, and we've inserted information on the minimum wage, paid sick leave, and occupational safety and health rights into those trainings and incorporate it into the curriculum. We've also been doing research to sort of document how does these labor conditions impact health. The very first health impact assessment that Rajiv did, and that led us to doing a number of different HIAs, was back in 1999 with the living wage health impact assessment. It was one of the first in the nation to be done, showing that living wage actually does impact health and subsequent outcomes for subsequent generations. We have done focus groups with day laborers. There was a work and health profile that Lily, who used to work with DPH, helped develop, sort of profiling different demographics within San Francisco, different worker populations. One of the ones that I've been most intimately involved with is a Chinatown restaurant worker study. That was a participatory research study that listed multiple years that involved Chinatown restaurant workers documenting and surveying other restaurant workers to see what their health and living conditions were and their working conditions. And it's they found that 50% of Chinese restaurant workers were experiencing minimum wage theft. So again, this is in San Francisco where we have the highest minimum wage in San Francisco. 50% of restaurant workers in Chinatown are not getting the $10 an hour that they should be getting. I have 2 minutes. Sorry, I'm going a little fast. So there's a number of different exciting research projects that we have. And it's all been collaborative, as Rajiv has said. It's being driven and done in collaboration with community partners. This work is also informing policy. I think one of the exciting things that happened this year, starting in September, is that there's been a wage theft task force that was started. It's an interagency task force in collaboration with community groups to try and identify what are the things we can do in San Francisco to address the problem of wage theft. The other really neat thing that I think we're doing in San Francisco actually sounds really boring, but is really, really important, which is using our existing authority to facilitate compliance with state and local labor laws. And that involves basically making sure that anybody who is getting a health permit from the Environmental Health Department has workers' compensation coverage. So there's a lot of people who don't have workers' comp, and then when their workers are injured, they that work ends up having to go to the social safety net to seek treatment. We're trying to help ensure that everybody that's supposed to have workers' comp, which is basically every business in San Francisco, has that. At the same time, we're using our health card authority to make sure that people aren't violating the minimum wage. How do we do this? Well, it's actually already within our authority as currently written to be able to do this. It's both within the San Francisco Minimum Wage Ordinance and the California Health and Safety Code that we have the right to basically revoke or suspend registration, any types of licensing for people that aren't following the law. And so that's what we're doing with different restaurants that have been found to not be complying with minimum wage. And as a result of doing that, we're actually able to get tens of thousands of dollars in back wages back to the workers who had been denied their wages. This is a sample letter that has been sent. And again, we're collaborating with the Office of Labor Standards Enforcement. The goal is not to start doing the work for them, but building on and supporting their work so that there is compliance with minimum wage. This is just an example of the permit renewal application process that we've been doing with workers' comp. For all the new people that are receiving a health permit, they're asked to send their proof of permit. When they're renewing their permit every year, they're requested to send verification. And if they refuse keep not responding and sending verification that they have it, then we can revoke their permit, and we can also refer them to the Department of Industrial Relations at the state level. So an exciting part of this is we can do some of this with minimal staff. It's part of our already routine responsibilities at this level of monitoring. If we were to scale it up, we would need more. We're able to sometimes get a faster response from employers than the Labor Department. There was one instance where the Office of Labor Standards Enforcement had been pursuing this one employer for 3 years and trying to get back wages, and within 3 months we were able to get the back wages by threatening to revoke the health permit. A challenge, however, is that we're not able to verify that all permanent facilities actually have workers' compensation. We're only doing a subset of the current sample, and also sometimes people can get workers' compensation, send us a verification letter, and then actually cancel it. So that's a challenge as well. However, there's a number of different opportunities that we're excited about in terms of interagency collaboration, identifying potential pilot projects and potential other health impact assessments of other labor policies. And I'd just like to end by acknowledging the many, many different people and organizations that have participated in the work that we've been doing and are helping us build it forward. So thank you very much for your time.